Morning, Park. Morning. I was sitting here listening to Mr. Barlow play on the keys over there, and I was thinking that I don't even know Mr. Barlow's first name, and here's the reason why. I probably did at some point, but the reason why is Mr. Barlow's Mr. Barlow in our house. Mr. Barlow is my daughter's band teacher, and what probably many of you don't know is he's literally a hero to generations of kids. I go to those middle school band concerts, which, you know, yeah. And I just see kids who their eyes and their hearts have been opened to music in a way that is pretty incredible. And so I think of Mr. Barlow, and I think of Alexis, and I think of John, and all of the people with their musical talents that they give week after week, and I just have to say thank you so much. Pastor Elena, you were speaking very prophetically when you heard from the Lord about point giving. Giving out points for being in service this morning, because I too heard from God about who does and doesn't get points this morning. And the good news is that everybody gets double points for showing up for church this morning in this kind of weather. Yeah, you can give yourself a double points is a big deal, because we all know that Sunday points are the best points in the kingdom. But before you feel too good about yourself, the Lord also told me that I get triple points. I'm just the messenger. I get triple points because I get one extra point for acclamation. This time last week, I was in Abu Dhabi, and that's a warmer place. You can look it up on your phone. And so I got a point of acclamation going from the desert to this. So I win. Last week, I wasn't here because I was finishing up some time in Southeast Asia, specifically in Nepal. The organization that I work with is Venture, and we specifically focus in areas of the world where we say the least reach meets the least resource. So we focus on areas where there is less than 5% gospel witness, and then we find those places where some of the greatest injustices are, and that's where we kind of plant ourselves to give the whole gospel. We believe that in some of the darkest places is the exact place where the full gospel is seen the most fully. And two of the areas that we work in quite a bit are refugee care and human trafficking. And in Nepal, we were looking at some of the projects and some of the different communities that we work with around this issue of human trafficking. And in Nepal, it's a different animal, this human trafficking thing, because in a lot of parts of the world, human trafficking is it's kind of engineered or powered by either extreme moral corruption or extreme greed. It's an economic engine. But in Nepal, it's more complex than that. In Nepal, trafficking is part of the fabric of what that culture is, because it's connected societally and religiously. In Nepal, as in India and some other places that are driven by the Hindu belief structure, there's a caste system. And this caste system puts people into seven different categories. And within those seven categories, then there are 30 different subcategories. In these categories, you are placed and you are told you are there because of karma. And in a past life, you either lived very well or very not well. And at the bottom of all 30 layers is a group called the Badi, B-A-D-I. And the Badi are called the untouchable. They are the lowest of the low. They really screwed up. And in this culture, the Badi are told that other people can do whatever they want to them. If they show up in a wrong place, if they go to a temple, they can literally be killed, and a higher class will not be persecuted for murdering them. They are told that their bodies are for play for anybody else, and they can do whatever they want, so they are literally the trafficked people. And so last couple of weeks, I was in Nepal looking at some of our projects, which was a 10 different flights over 12 different days that took me from Minneapolis to Florida to Bangkok to Abu Dhabi. I think we hit Dubai. But anyway, we ended up in Kathmandu. And after Kathmandu, we took another flight over to Nepalganj, which is in the remote western part of Nepal. And after flying all of those flights, then we got on a bus or a van, and we started driving on these windy mountain roads that will freak you out. We were this close, and it was that big of a drop. And while it was beautiful, it would have been a beautiful death, too. Very scary stuff. And we went to some of the furthest villages that we partner in. And these villages are the literal poorest place I've ever been in all of my travels. And in the midst of this kind of oppressive poverty, and it's oppressive poverty because the caste system and powers that be are oppressively keeping groups of people down, we would go to these villages. And in several of the villages that I was in, more than 70% of the kids will be trafficked by age 9. And as I was talking with some of the villagers there and some of our partners, one of them said, by the time kids are 2 to 3 years old, they're already being groomed for this, and dads, brothers, uncles have already begun the process by 2 or 3 years old. It was very hard to handle. And she said, this is hard for you to understand, but this is our way of life. And so we're in this village, and we identify some of the most vulnerable of the girls, and we notice one girl who is standing next to one man that we know is the John or the pimp of that village. And we know that when a young girl is standing next to a young man, that's not a good situation. And we find out from the mom that this girl is being sold to India very shortly, 9 years old. And so we pray, and maybe how you're feeling right now is how I felt that day. It was very heavy, very dark. We don't always feel like more than conquerors. And so we went back to where we were staying that night, and we prayed, and we said, God, give us a plan. And so we decided we would go back and we would talk with the mom one more time, and we asked God to do what we weren't able to do. And over the course of that evening, multiple things unfolded, and we went back to that village, and within 24 hours, the mom said, yes, you can take the girl, and that girl was rescued. And now that girl is in one of the safe houses. She's eating better food than she's ever had. She slept on a mattress that she never slept on. She had a shower with indoor plumbing that she'd never seen before. She was on a plane, which was not her favorite thing in the world. We also, for the record, have social workers and police officers that work with us. We have a very keen system. And I was just thinking how incredible it is to be a part of that kind of rescue. And then the next day, we went back to another village, and maybe one of the top 10 highlights of my life was we got to baptize 25 people in a river. A cold river, mind you. This is the mountains, and there was snow, and they didn't care. And I got to step into the river and baptize some of these people from the Badi village. And if you can picture with me, I'm in the water with another pastor, and we're baptizing these young girls. And on the riverbank is the community of Christ followers all singing, I have decided to follow Jesus in Nepalese. And then there was this small team of Americans singing in American, just kidding, singing English. And there we also had a group that was singing Swedish, and it was a beautiful picture of what rescue is, because while the day before we did physical rescue, baptism is nothing short of kingdom rescue. The Nepali church, as Christians, they practice immersion as baptism, full immersion. As we do here, we do both sprinkling and immersion. I've seen them both in this space, but immersion is a picture of Easter. It is the old person standing in front of everybody saying, I have decided to follow Jesus. And as they are fully submerged in water, when they come up new, saying, I am now part of a new order, a new kingdom, a new way of living. And you have to understand to the Badi how powerful this is, because they're told they're the last. They're told they're the tail. They're told that whatever happens to them, they deserve. But the gospel tells them that the last shall be first, and the first shall be last, that the tail shall be the head, and that these princesses have extreme and eternal value. And this is the Easter message. This is what Easter is all about. And so as these girls were walking back up to the edge of the river, and as we all sang, I have decided to follow Jesus, I couldn't help but thinking, well, now this is a good way to celebrate Lent. And that brings us to our passage today, which is found in the book of Mark, Mark chapter 8. I'm going to read 7 verses, 31 to 38, starting with verse 31. Then he began to teach them that the Son of Man must undergo great suffering and be rejected by elders, the chief priests, and the scribes, and be killed, and after 3 days rise again. He said all this quite openly, and Peter took him aside and began to rebuke him. That's a gutsy move. But turning and looking at his disciples, he rebuked Peter and said, "Get behind me, Satan, for you are setting your mind not on divine things, but on human things." And he called to the crowd with his disciples, and he said to them, "If any want to become my followers, let them deny themselves and take up their cross and follow me. For those who want to save their life will lose it, and those who lose their life for my sake and for the sake of the gospel will save it. For what will it profit them to gain the whole world and forfeit their life? Indeed, what can they give in return for their life? Those who are ashamed of me and of my worship in this adulterous and sinful generation, of them the Son of Man will also be ashamed when he comes in the glory of his Father with the holy angels." The word of God for the people of God. This is I've always looked at this particular passage as being pretty heavy. There's a lot of emotion happening here. Jesus is laying out some of the last times what this new kingdom is about to look like. It says that he says it very succinctly, what this new kingdom is going to be like. And then you've got Peter that's arguing with him, and then he's calling him Satan, and, you know, it's tense. And then he looks at everybody else and says, "Okay, you want to be a part of this? We're going to raise the ante. It's going to be tough. You got to carry your cross." It's a lot of heavy things happening. And as I look at this text over the last couple of weeks and even over days, there is so much freedom and so much love and so much hope, because the whisper is there's a new kingdom and there's a new way. A new way that's about to come, a way that this Lent we celebrate the anniversary of a new coronation of a new kingdom. And so one of the things that sticks out to me is Jesus says, "Hey, I'm going to suffer, I'm going to be beat up, I'm going to be rejected, I'm going to be killed, and then 3 days later, I'm going to be risen." That is the most succinct Easter message I've ever heard. We could just go home. Amen. But we're not. I got some more. But one of the things he said is, he says, "I must do the will of the Father." And this word "must" is so interesting to me, because most of the time I think of Jesus as God, and I forget that he's also 100% human at this time. And this idea of "must" indicates that there's a moral battle happening inside of him. There is an agitation. There is wrestling going on, because the fully human side does not want to go through this kind of pain, does not want to go through this kind of anguish. And he's asking his Father multiple times, "Is there any other way we can do this besides this bloody way?" But he comes to the resolve and says, "This must happen." And so there is a level of submission. And then Peter pipes in and he's like, "Oh, that's ridiculous. You're like the man, right?" And Jesus says, "Whoa, you've got this all wrong. You're thinking from a human perspective. You're only thinking of human consequence, and you are not thinking of the divine, the sovereign, the sacred, the whisper of the kingdom to come that must have all things in the right order." And then he looks at the group and he says, "While we're on the subject, here's what it's going to take. What it's going to take is for you to pick up your cross and follow me." All different walks of life and all different ages may have different pictures of what this means. My first picture of what it means to pick up your cross and follow is, wow, that sounds heavy. I grew up in a state near here, and I grew up in a denomination similar to this. And one of the things we would do as a good middle-class white youth group is we would go to the inner city, to those people that really needed things, right? And I remember going to this thing. It was called Milwaukee Outreach. And I remember there was this pastor And he would literally have this huge cross and would walk around Milwaukee all the time carrying the cross. And my first thought was, well, that's awkward. My second thought was, I hope God doesn't ask me to do that. But the third thought was really, is that what it looks like to carry our cross? And for him, quite possibly. And then as I kept wrestling with, what does it mean to carry my cross as I got older, I thought, well, I know what that means. That means I don't get to go to parties and drink in high school. I'm going to be made fun of. That's carrying my cross. You know, it meant that I can't date girls who aren't Christians. That was a big cross to bear because that really sliced down their options. It meant different things. And then I got to college and I read about a missionary named Jim Elliot who gave up his life, was literally speared to death for the sake. And I was like, oh, is that picking up our cross and following him? What does it mean to suffer? And I think all of those things might be true, but I think what Jesus is saying here is it's not first about the pain and the suffering, although that does happen, but it's about the priority of who you're serving. And it is about submitting my will to the will of the Father, to the will of this new kingdom. It's about reprioritizing who we are this Lent season and reminding ourselves that the way of the cross is both beautiful, but it also is submitting to something larger than we are. And this is difficult because humans, we know, atrophy to comfort. We atrophy to laziness. We atrophy to safety. And while those things in certain seasons can be good, Jesus here is reminding us that if you want to be a part of this new and beautiful kingdom, we have to put things in right order. We have to put things in an order that says His will, not my will. Recognizing as we let God continue to work in our heart that His will is the best will. We can give cognitive assent. We can say, yes, I believe that, but our actions are slow to follow. In fact, I heard one person say that sinning is settling for anything less than God's best. I thought that's a good way to do it because, one, that probably means I sin a lot more, but it also means that I don't have to narrow in on just a handful of things. And I can pursue what God's best is and trust that the kingdom, this beautiful kingdom that is reordering all things, is where I find my primary citizenship. And it's an invitation for us to not be led by our human feelings, but by something else. I tell my kids, I'm glad my two bigs are not here because they would roll their eyes. I'm always telling them, this is great parenting, by the way. I always tell them, you can feel whatever you want. That's okay. But what you do is something else. You can feel angry at mom all you want, but you raise your voice to her and I might drop kick you across next week. I hope there's no social workers here. Next week is metaphorical. We can feel whatever you want. You can feel drawn to somebody else. You can feel like you want more money. You can feel like you don't want to help. We can feel a lot of things, but that feeling stops, or at least is in submission to this new order, this new kingdom, the coronation of this new way of living that we celebrate at Easter when we immerse ourselves in the water and come up new and say, this is the new order that I want to fill. And so when you are raving mad, you may still choose a behavior, words of peace. When you have something you really want to buy, whether you have lots of money or very little money, you may still choose to be generous with somebody else, even if that means you don't get that thing that you really think you deserve. Even though you don't have a lot of time, even though you're very busy, even though you'd rather sleep in, even though you don't feel so well, you may still choose to live sacrificially on behalf of other people. The kingdom invites us not to be subject to our feelings, but to be subject to this new and beautiful order that we are reminded of this Lent season. That when somebody is hungry, we feed them. End of story. When a sojourner is in our midst, we open our home. End of story. When there is great injustice in the world, we speak up, and when we don't, high schoolers do. I want to be clear, I'm not taking a side. I'm saying that there is deep brokenness, and our voice needs to be heard here in Park about the kingdom, not about a political slant. About the kingdom, this new, fresh thing that this Lent season we are reminded of, this great coronation that happened. And if you look in the book of John, if you want to research, the book of John talks about the triumphant entry of Jesus on a donkey and parallels the classic coronation of what a new king would look like. Instead of on a steed, he's on a donkey. And instead of on a throne, he's on a cross. But it's this new coronation of a new way of living that you all got up and you plowed through in your four-wheel drive or your itty-bitty car through the snow to be reminded that we serve a new, beautiful order. And this is the will of the Father. The will of the Father is that all are drawn to Him. The will of the Father is that every person in here has extreme dignity and value. The will of the Father is that those who are hungry are fed, and the will of the Father is those who do not have a place to lay their head are invited to have a bed. The will of the Father is that the chains will be loosed, and those who are enslaved will be freed. The will of the Father is that homes are healed, that the broken is made whole, that the sick are healed, and that the confused have a clear path that they know leads to the foot of the cross, to this new kingdom of which we are all invited to be a part of. The will of the Father and the way of the cross is not led by what is easy. It's led by His will. And I think this Lent season, as we continue to remind ourselves and remind each other as a community of what it looks like for us to not be subject to our feelings, and I want to be clear, your feelings are okay, there's nothing wrong. But to allow your feelings to be subject to the will of the Father, that this week we would remind ourselves of our citizenship. I've got a buddy who's about to release a book. It's actually a 30-day devotional. And the whole concept is, he says that he preaches the gospel to himself every day. He literally rolls out of bed and gets on his knees, and he preaches the gospel to himself. Now, I don't know if you've raised up in what kind of church or no kind of church, but preaching the gospel to myself makes me think I'm yelling at myself. But being reminded by the King of Kings and the Lord of Lords that there's a coronation of a new kingdom that brings order and peace and rest and justice and rightness is something that not only do I want to be reminded of, but I want to do daily. To be reminded that we don't have to act based on what we feel, but we can act based on this great and beautiful kingdom thing is amazing. It's happening all around us. Just from the time that I showed up at this building, do you notice that all of the sidewalks in the parking lot was plowed? I will tell you, I don't know everybody who did it, but I know Pete got up about 4 this morning. Do you think he woke up going, "Woo! I can't wait to shovel. That sounds awesome." Maybe he did. I don't know. I've never woke up with Pete. All God's good gifts. Thank you. But he got up and he did that. I was going to check on Justice, who sang in the choir, and I heard Miss Alexa say she's not feeling good. If you're not feeling good, do you think you want to go take care of a bunch of other parents' kids? You know, because some of you don't do such a good job. You're welcome. I know we do awesome. I get it. But she got up. She got up and she did it. And I applaud you for that. Do you think John up there wanted to get a last-minute call to do sound for us when someone else couldn't do it? I don't know if you... Paul, John's brother, Paul. It's such a tough name to remember, right? Yeah. But do you think someone just wants to get out of bed and do that? How about all of you who have kids or who it's a little bit more difficult to get out in the snow? I mean, these are the things that we do. We continue to practice the behaviors that allow us to be closer to what the kingdom looks like. Romans 12:1 simply says it, to be being transformed by the renewing of our mind, the present indicative active, to be being transformed. And so I just want to invite you to stand right now. It's good. Yep. And if we could go back to the beginning where we were baptizing, and I remember this Nepali girl. I mean, it was like it was a director cut of a movie. She was all in white, and she waded into the water with tears in her eyes. And then we said, in the name of the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit, and what was old and broken was symbolically put underwater, and as she came up, she was glowing, and her pastor prayed over her, and then she walked to the edge of the bank where people were singing, "I have decided to follow Jesus," and people surrounded her and prayed for her and told her she had a new name, a new identity, a new way of seeing the world, that chains were broken and things were loose, and she had a new future. And this is us this morning. This is not some trafficked girl in another part of the world. This is every single one of us this morning who can be reminded that outside of the kingdom of what Christ did, experiencing suffering and brokenness and rejection and death, but then rising again on the third day to usher in a new way for all of us to participate in, that we too can find freedom. Whatever you carry this morning, you too can find freedom. That whatever feelings you've been led by, you can give them to Christ and say, "I submit these feelings to a new order, to a new beautiful order." And we join together with saints all over the world, from the lowest caste to the highest economic class, recognizing our brokenness, but equally worshiping a daily decision to follow Jesus this Lent season.